Hi, everyone. Russ Thomas here from RST Coaching Academy. Welcome to a new episode of Money Talks, where we talk about money and how to make more of it. Hey, everybody out there in internet land, Russ here again on RST from RST Coaching Academy, sponsor and host of Money Talks, where we talk about money and how to make more of it. And here we are talking with a new friend of mine. Her name is Rochelle Thompson from Washington, D.C. And I'm not going to say she's a business person. She's a psychologist. Can you believe it? But she's coming from that arena of the mind and going to help us get our heads on straight so we can figure out how to turn every opportunity into bettering our financial situation. So without further ado, Rochelle, I introduce you. Thanks for coming on today, and we'll have a good time discussing this subject, all right? So we want to hear about your background, where you came from, how you got into what you're doing, the schooling, the doctorate, and so on and so forth. So take it away and we'll have fun. Thanks.
I love it. Thank you, Russ. I'm super excited to be here today. And normally when I say that, it is a formality and just a gesture of trying to be positive, but I really genuinely mean that, and that I've seen your platform and some of your other stories. I loved the story of Sheila Slick and what she provided from the SCORE mentoring. And you had an entrepreneur named Colby on, and it was just really cool to see people transforming their lives in such a way that they align with their purpose. So indeed. A little bit about me, you know, which kind of particularly kind of aligns with that, is I am Dr. Rochelle Thompson. I am a psychologist. I am a chief executive officer of Arm Thompson & Co., which is a consulting mental health practitioner organization. And I am a founder of a nonprofit and president. The nonprofit is based in Washington, D.C. It's called the Black Voice Project. And I also am an author and a counselor. So I actually do some work too in the field. So I'm super.
How do you do all this in one day?
Listen, I don't even ask myself that question anymore. It's just like I'm in go mode. I really don't even ask anymore.
Yeah, well, never a dull moment.
Yeah, it's not. So coming from where, you know, just a little background about my story. So I was raised in an area called Washington, D.C., and so Northwest Uptown, and also an area called Landover, Maryland, which happens to also be Kentland. That's what it was called back in the day. And so in these areas, they aren't your most economic developed areas as far as where I grew up and how I was raised. And essentially not having or coming from money was almost something that people expected, you know, when you grew up where I grew up. It was just, you just kind of get it however you live and you try to, you know, work the system as best as you can work the system. And it was almost unrealistic to, or unheard of to really have dreams or aspirations of owning your own business or going to college or any of the things that I've, you know, managed to do. It just was unreal. So right. Having, you know, that background, it also gave me grit. And it also provided me the space to ensure that I took all of the street smarts in which I was afforded to have and still allow my dreams to permeate and allow me to excel. And so when you walk past, you know, for me in Washington, D.C. and Uptown, there was a neighborhood. It was called Morton Street 640. And this was considered to be the projects. And for me as a, you know, as a teenager kind of growing up in that area, and you walk past someone who is on drugs and they're like, you know, just hammered over in a corner of the stairwell, and you have to walk past them. I always had an empathetic side. And I always felt bad because I was just like, wow, I wonder what happened in that person's life where they ended up here. And like at this point, you know, where they are and at this age, you know, some of them would be a lot older than I was at the time.
Like everybody's got a story, don't they?
They do. It used, and I was very curious about that. I used to be like, what was it? And so then as I began to get a little older, I realized how hard it is to be a sober adult, right? Because the world will really beat you up, you know, especially when you don't have The finances or the opportunities to be able to earn, or even the mindset to even think that you could do these things.
Right. There's a couple of questions that in your upbringing, did you have a what is the term? A nuclear family? Was your dad present in the family unit?
So my dad worked a lot, and so my grandmother raised me. So between my grandparents, they were the rock stars in my life. And so when
Okay.
I got to Landover, it was by the grace of God, for my grandmother who really took me in and raised me. I did not have my mom around growing up, and I did not know what that looked like, being a young woman. So my father and working so often, and my father's story is pretty interesting too, because he used to, indulge in some things in which he wasn't, the proud of. But later on, as he became older, was able to go back to school, get his degrees, and is now helping me to run my nonprofit these days.
Really? That's awesome. Wow. And he can do that from his experience because he's lived it and come through it. That's awesome. You
Absolutely.
made mention too, it gave you grit.
Yes.
And then something about street smarts. You weren't the only kid growing up in that kind of environment. And yet, how many of your peers, your fellow students and kids have moved out of that realm, have been able to overcome, and they got some grit. What is special about you that allowed you to acquire grit, I guess basically is the word I'm coming off on. I mean, the thing is that we all suffer situations and setbacks, and I've always said, and I'm sure you agree, we cannot help and affect necessarily what happens to us, but we are very responsible for how we respond, how we
Yes.
react. So, what do you think it was in you that helped you to respond the way you did and acquire that grit and the street smarts to help you move on from that environment?
Growing up, Russ, I saw people who were most of the kids in my neighborhood, extremely smart, extremely intelligent. And I was like a sponge to some of the guys, especially those that, happened to indulge in selling drugs, or those who indulged in like behaviors that probably weren't the best reflected these days. However, what I found had some of those guys taken some of those same practices and principles, they would have been some of the best CEOs we would have seen to date had they done it legitimately, because of the way that they were. So I would always be a sponge. I would always ask questions. I was always very curious. And I played basketball at the time. So I was one of the very few girls that played basketball. And so that taught me, number one, when you're playing with these guys, if you are going to play, you can't complain, about getting fouled, right? You cannot complain about that. And so you take some of that and you apply that to today's business, right? Can't complain. It's what are you going to do about it? So if you get knocked down, are you going to
Suck
cry
it
about it?
up.
I'm not going to let you play anymore if you do. So you got to get back up. So it was being a sponge, and then just really taking all of the experiences of others, like, oh my goodness, I know that I don't want to go to jail. I know that I don't want to be on a system of government assistance. I know that I don't want to die, essentially, from staying in this environment. So once you kind of see that as a young person, I'm like, okay, but if I could take this piece from that person and this piece from that person and kind of like really put all of that together in my little toolbox as I get out of here, I'm gonna be all right. And so, when you again coming in and out from school, I just knew I was different, Russ. I knew that this wasn't it. This wasn't gonna be me.
This
It
is
was
where you started, but you didn't have to stay there.
Exactly. Exactly. I said I knew I wanted more, but more importantly, I knew I wanted to be able to go out and get opportunities and bring them back in so people could also see that they don't have to stay here either. Yeah. So
Well,
that was the basis for that.
and sometimes a lot of people coming from a rough background, and they are, you mentioned by the grace of God before, definitely so, are able to move out of that. And they just forget about all of that. And they're too busy, schmoozing with their new peers and the new lifestyle, and the heck with those people back there. So it's an awesome thing that you and the success that you achieved by getting out and so on wanted to go back and affect the lives of those who are yet there. In fact, by the time you were ready to go back, I'm sure there was a whole, just about a whole new generation of kids coming up that needed to be affected by you and allow you to input their lives. I interviewed a lady the other day from Hollywood, California, that she and her family own and operate a not-for-profit organization that works with at-risk foster children in
Wow.
that California area. And it was just, I mean, it was just, I never know what I'm going to get into when I start one of these interviews, you know? And so talking with her was just so cool. And to hear her heart and how she wanted to help these people. And you've got the same thing that this woman had. Her name is Pamela Clay. And it was just really cool. And so I commend you for being willing to go back and get back in there in the thick of it and say, hey, I made it out and I'm here to help you, show you how you can make it out too. That's really cool.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm going to look her up as well. Like, I'm encouraged to always connect with other nonprofit founders. So thank you for amplifying her. But yeah, it's really important right now. It's a war on the minds of our children right now, on the youth. And so you think, we're long gone, they're the ones that are going to be here. And so it is a little bit of my responsibility to take what I've learned and be able to share some piece of it, so that way someone, at the end of the day, can switch their mental cue and viewpoint to say, man, I do have other options. This isn't where my story has to end.
That's right. Yeah, because it can be an awful, ugly ending. Like you were saying, you didn't want to be on drugs. You didn't want to die. So, I mean, what are the alternatives? Not too pretty.
Yeah, it's not. And then I didn't want to also not have the information either, because you can only learn by so much in those environments. Essentially, I didn't understand. And so, for example, with the area 640 on Morton Street, it's gone now. It's completely gone. They've tore those projects down, and they're rebuilding and gentrifying what we're seeing in Washington, D.C., heavier than ever. And so I don't know that people knew, but they had the vo you could have had the voice to fight for that, and or the voice to be able to, take whatever money that you've earned from the street and be able to probably buy the area in which you're vehemently claiming. And so I didn't want to not have the information that other people had. And so as I began to continuously get sparked, it was a woman named Karen Casella. I was like 11th or 12th grade at the time. And she was from American University, and she was really good with going to different schools. And they were looking for a youth mayor of DC. And so they were getting people in the political arena. And so had not it been for this lady, I have no clue where I would be today, because it was her to say, like, oh yeah, let's go down to the National Press Club, or, here's this going on. Let's groom you a little bit, right? Because I was very good at debating. I always loved to read. I used to read the dictionary all the time. I used to always try to, be the I was that girl. Like, I wanted to be the best, right? So the other part of me, though, is I was very short-tempered. So when I felt like things were unethical, it was just like I was so revolutionary. So I had to figure out how to center that, right? So she took me, and had me get into this program, this debate team and political arena. And she's like, there is a way for you to effectively fight for things, to use your voice. And so I remember, going down to the National Press Club, and I needed to have a suit. It was crazy. I had braids at the time, which was totally, you
And
just
you
don't.
were how old again, did you say?
This time I was like 16, 17 years old. And so we're seeing the Senate, and I was a Washingtonian my whole life, never been down to the Senate building, never did any of that. Like, that wasn't my thing. I wasn't a tourist, so to speak. So, in any event, They had their little mini elections, and I ended up running and I became the youth mayor of DC,
No
which was,
kidding.
yeah, it was pretty cool, pretty darn cool.
Wow.
So I saw what she did. And even though she couldn't identify 100% with my struggle or my stories, she had like a certain privilege. She was a white woman, but she was super cool, amazing, like down to earth. But she came back and she said, I want to be a part of helping the community because I want to be a part of creating diversity and equitable and inclusive spaces. And she tapped into me something amazing, which allowed me to then start my like journey of being able to really see like there's so much more out here in the world, and if I could get sharp, like we could change to this. And it changes with advocacy, it changes with paperwork. You got to know, the type of legislation and laws, and also really knowing that you have a voice and your voice matters. And so that's a part of the work that I do today. And so when we think about money talks and having a mindset, you really have to believe in yourself. And most of the people that I work with now are entrepreneurs, CEOs, and it all starts out with an internalized belief. And some of them have would have never reached their full potential. They come from the same backgrounds as I do, had they not shifted their mindset and really believe that they deserve these opportunities and they deserve to make change, in their life and to earn money. So anyway, I'm sorry, I can go on a tangent sometimes.
Well, that's now we're getting into the thing here of the mindset to help our audience basically, and it doesn't matter where a person started from. If they want to improve themselves, they've got to start doing something different.
Yes.
And before they're going to be able to start doing something different, they're going to have to start thinking something different and then talking something different. The doing seems like it's the result of what happens here, what comes out of here, and then we
Yes.
live it through in our daily lives. So maybe you can address, I don't know if it's the psychological transformation of a mindset. Is there some study? Have you got any insight into that? What in the heck goes on inside of us to say, wow, it's time to change. I got to get new information. Something that happens within a person to get to that point of saying, hey, I'm willing to change. I'm willing to do whatever it takes. You understand what I'm asking?
Yeah, I do. What where it starts is what we call in the psychology realm adverse child experiences, your adverse childhood experiences. They call it ACE or ACE. And so typically, this is where our first internalized beliefs about ourselves can develop in a negative way. And what an adverse childhood experience is a traumatic event that occurs sometime between 0 and the age of 17. And so we know that our parents are the first, our parents or whomever raises us in that environment too, as well. Those are our first interactions with, if our needs are going to get met and what we believe about ourselves. So, your mom says, oh, you know what? You're really beautiful. You're really amazing. And blah, 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 blah,
Yeah,
blah,
my
blah.
mom said that all the time. I was really beautiful. Anyway, go on.
And look at you now, right?
I'm
And look
just
at you
kidding.
now. Polished and beautiful. No, but no, really, so when you hear these things, it shapes a lot of how you believe things happen by yourself. When you start to see that, you see how, people deal with money, right? Your parents, for example. So for me, take that for example, having seen neglect, or having felt that, having to like really have the bare minimum, not really having that at all. The psychological aspect of, seeing violence a lot, experiencing like some really stressful events in my life. Also the words that people would say, because it wasn't common in my arena, we were taught how to survive. It wasn't, you weren't taught how to, be uplifted per se, right? It wasn't like, oh, you're amazing, all of that. It was just like, get yourself together, you know, was you had time to be emotional, you know, it just like, this is just how it is, you know, and this is, you know, you're going to be this if you continue to do this. Like it was always focused on the bad things too. It really wasn't the thing. So anytime you know, you had a moment, we only focused on the bad things. It wasn't any like 100,000% uplifting. So you learn. So taking that into consideration, my, and always seeing people not really be good with money. Like I didn't see, you know, home ownership. Like that wasn't like a common thing that I saw growing up. I didn't see, we didn't have conversations about credit. I could not go to anybody for advice about how to start an LLC. That wasn't, there was no one in the purview of my family in which, you know, I started to think about these things at the age of 22 or 23, where I could say family, like, hey, so I don't make mistakes in my business, or I don't make mistakes building this nonprofit. Tell me what you know. I didn't have access to any of that. I had to learn the hard way. So by way of these experiences, it instilled something in me where, number one, a little bit of, I don't know if I belong or I should be doing this stuff. Like, I don't know if I should start a business. You know, I don't know if I really belong in this space. You know, even when it came to going to college, I was like, oh, this is, I feel a little like I'm betraying my community in a sense. Like, I don't know. Should be, you know, these are internalized thoughts that I would have. Nobody would know. And I never projected it the otherwise, but these are the things that I thought about myself. So I struggled with management of money. I struggled with like really proactively getting started on things. I would procrastinate a lot because of my fear, because of thoughts, because no one reassured me growing up, like, oh yeah, you could be a businesswoman. Or, you know, I remember being in school, in elementary school, saying, you know, I wanted to be a president. And the teacher would tell me, well, they're, you know, well, normally that's only men and they don't look like black girls. I remember a teacher saying that to me,
Really,
you know,
yeah.
and from
That was
there,
then. That was then.
I was like, wow, I don't, well, dang, I can't be a president. I can't, you know, so what am I supposed to do, you know, with my life? And so these are the beliefs that I would creep up, and it caused me to stall a little bit on my, you know, on my advancement of my story up until a certain point. And I had to start doing the work on myself to say, no, I really do deserve this. And no, I really do belong in these spaces with people. And I am everything excellent. And so I'm going to continue to exude that. And even though I make mistakes along the way, I'll figure it out. But again, it all starts from the internal belief. So I had to reparent myself all over again, Russ. I had to encourage myself. I had to be my own cheerleader at the end of the day. And so for other entrepreneurs, that's kind of where we start. You have to look at, man, did your parents, you know, I knew I didn't want to be poor because I saw it. I saw it. I was like, I know, I definitely know I don't want to be broke. That is not for me, right? I want to be able to have nice things. I want to be able to not worry about my finances and stuff. So because of those experiences, it shifted my mindset, allowed me to really look into who I am and figure out like what I wanted to be. And then under no circumstances allowed myself to deter from my plan.
Yeah, those as you were coming to the conclusion that you need to change your thinking and started to do so, were you not still inundated with those thoughts from the past? And
Every
then how did you, and maybe you still do, how did you overcome? How do you overcome? Folks, you know, listen now, she's telling her story of how she came, where she came from, and how she's gotten out of that. Maybe you didn't start there, but you had some adverse childhood experiences yourself, some negative stuff that locked themselves into your little brain, into your little mind when you're 0 to 17 years old. And it's up to you now to figure out how to overcome those. So relate to what Rochelle is saying, because it's applicable to all of us, because we all have all that crap floating around in our heads if we are dumb enough to listen to it and let it affect us. Go for it.
Yeah, absolutely. To, you know, to this day, absolutely. The voices sometimes permeate. And I think it's a little different than when I was younger to now, because now, again, being, you know, normally when I enter into most rooms, I'm generally going to be the youngest. generally going to probably be the highest in terms of degree. I'm not probably going to be the richest. I'm not probably going to have the title, though, at the end of the day. And then I'm also going to be probably the only person of color in the room. Generally, that's what it looks like when I walk into most rooms. And so those things put me at a disadvantage already in the gate, out the gate. And so oftentimes when I'm confronted with having to walk into a room, it's just like, oh my goodness, well, I don't want to come off like I'm, a Miss Know-It-All, right? Because of my title and then offend anybody. But then at the same time, I want my voice to be heard and for people to take me seriously. And what I realized even over time in my corporate career is that there are going to be people with bigger titles than me. There are going to be people with more money than me in the room, but that doesn't mean that they have better ideas.
Right.
So I've taken that to say, well, I'm not going to allow somebody to treat me like an imposter because sometimes we think it's imposter syndrome because I'm no longer an imposter. I've deserved and I worked really hard to be in these rooms. So sometimes when I get in those spaces, there are comments, oftentimes microaggressions that can be transcended where it makes me doubt whether or not I should be in the room. But then I have to go back to my little drawing board and say, okay, hold on, Rochelle, like get yourself together. Like, you got this. Like you've worked hard for this. You studied. You've prepared for this. So let's get in the game. And again, that grit comes into play. So you get knocked down, you can't just cry and leave out of the corporate boardroom. You can't just cry and leave out of the meeting. You got to get back up, right? You come at it again from a different approach, or you pivot, right? Even on the basketball court, we take a little pivot. We get a little curious, but then we also are very clear. I'm also very clear about what I'm here to do, and I get it done. So sometimes, yes, but again, that grit and some of those childhood experiences again comes back, and it's like Rochelle, it's like the inner tiger that comes out, and it's like, let's go, let's focus what we got to do here because we still have a job that we need to do.
And I imagine, I hope you find those voices being softer and quieter, and some of them have even just totally gone, that they don't even come up anymore, or is it still all that stuff is still tends to come back?
I had to really go on a journey for myself, even before being a psychologist, because again, I don't want to be the lady that's teaching people how to think. And that's what I do. I teach people how to think, not what to think, but I can't be the person that teaches someone how to think. And I haven't practiced it myself. That would be weird. So,
Great.
I really learned how to develop a better relationship with myself. And watch the things that I say to myself and really level myself and not be so hard on myself in the same breath. So those voices are very much so more kinder than they used to be now. So it's definitely different, but that's because I had to take some time out to really do the work on who on me first before I even stepped into the arena and working with other people and working with corporate clients and things of that nature. I had to work on myself. And it took me to work with some having mentorship with people who, didn't look like me, who didn't come from the same background, but had experience. They were my mentors. And sometimes for those that are looking for mentors, it's not direct interactions with people. Sometimes it could just be a book. I've read the authors of certain books have inspired me, and have mentored me in ways that they wouldn't even understand. It could be a podcast, listening to people's stories. And those people become mentors for me. So, having counsel, wise counsel, allowed me to also have a kinder voice towards myself as well, because it was reassuring to know that I am going in the right direction or I am aligning the way I'm supposed to be aligning based off of, just the status quo, if you will, of people who are successful.
And that goes in line with what I do here at RST Coaching Academy is number one. We offer online sales training, 24 hours a day, any place in the world, but then also coaching, business and individual coaching to help mentor an individual and help them get their minds on, their heads on straight and establish goals and plans and then come up with strategic plans in order to realize those things. And, I've learned that the best investment that we can make as individuals is in ourselves. It pays the best returns, one way or another. And
Yes.
so many people, I barely got through college, graduated in 1970 with a C plus average and majored in weekends, so I was quite the mess. It's a good thing I was on a 4-year plan because I was going downhill every year. But all through my business career of over 50 years, I never saw the need to invest in making me better professionally. I went to church, grew, went to church to become a better person, but didn't think about the professional side. And that's where people are going to stumble if they're looking for advancement in, say, the business world or, income producing opportunities. We've got to shell out something in order to put more stuff inside of us that we can use. And one of the things you indicated before is you would sense these things coming at you, in you, not maybe nobody saying anything, but just the record was going around reminding you of your background and stuff, and you had to step aside and deal with those things before you could get past. You had to encourage yourself, basically. It's kind of like a mental game, but it's a game that you got to win, right? We got to win that game.
It is. And you know what, Rez, I'm sure you probably find this in your coaching experience, but you know that those internal voices, that fear or the silence of your voice, that imprisons more people than any jail in America. You know, you can find yourself literally living in a tormented space mentally, and feeling like there's a cage around your heart when you listen to voices that don't really align with where you're trying to go, and you allow them to create fear, or you allow them to silence you in a room where you should probably be speaking up, you know, or you allow it to silence you when you need something. Because again, that was also another thing. When you're running an organization or you're running a business, you're going to have to ask for help. You cannot do it by yourself, right? And so you have to know how to manage teams. You got to know how to bring the right people on your team. And so that also starts from, you know, your ego, right? So you got to make sure that you check your ego when you're running an organization, so you're not scaring everybody away, and that you're being curious. And that starts with your mental mindset, and not allowing yourself to be scared to ask for help, not allowing yourself to be scared to trust that you're hiring the right people, you know, and not to doubt yourself, so that way you can create an organization that's sustainable. So yeah, you make a great point.
And the individual has to be willing to give up some of the direct control over, the different aspects, the different facets of the business, shall we say, hopefully to people that have been well trained by that individual in terms of processes, the passing on of values, passing on of vision and mission, that kind of thing. And if they have been, then they can kind of become a mini owner, so to speak, a mini me. But if they haven't been through that process, or if they don't really agree with it, then eventually it's not going to work out because they're going to be on their own doing their own thing. And the owner, the manager, is just going to be saying, "Whoa, what happened here?" Well, it started kind of with them because they didn't do the right thing and train up the person in the way that they should go, under the umbrella of that particular organization. It's not it There's so much rocket science to this, but then again, there's heart science in it as well.
It is, and you make a good point. I was working with an executive at one time to help them grow their business. And initially, it started off as a small business, and it was just him. So he was doing the actual work, and then he was doing the accounts payable, accounts receivable. He was doing the taxes. He was doing the marketing. He was doing everything in the business, the HR stuff. And I'm like, this is not sustainable. So then, you know, he started to hire people. So now we get to him having maybe 15 people under him, but he would micromanage so much, and he would insert himself in every aspect where it was not running efficiently. It wasn't running like a business. And so you look crazy. You're like in every meeting. How are you in every meeting? And you're the owner, CEO. Why are you there if you have an accounts payable person, and
Yeah.
it goes back to his adverse childhood experiences, right? So why do I have to micromanage so much, or why do I have to feel like I have to take on all of the things to do? It was because when I trusted people as an adult, like as a child, when I trusted people, they always disappointed me when I
Oh.
trusted adults, right?
This was him. This was him speaking to you. Okay.
Yes. Yes. Once we got to, because I had to, I was like, you're running around, you're making me sick. I'm watching you run around and it's bothering me. So let's unpack this, is what I'll say. And so what we came to was, he didn't have his father in his life, and he didn't have a good mother. She was on drugs. And so as a young child, he would he, it's the common thing that we probably hear a lot. Someone saying, well, I'm on the way, I'm gonna come get you, and they never show up, right? They never were there. Or someone saying, you know what, I'm gonna get you, I'm gonna get you that shoes, or I'm gonna get you the thing that you need, right? I'm gonna get that for you, okay? I'll have it for you. And then they don't have it. They don't show up with it. And so he grew up most of his life with that unmet need and that lack of reliability on people translated into him and his business now as an adult, where he felt like all these people were like his parents, growing up, where they would say that they would do something, but they would never show up. And his fear was, with him building this business, is that he couldn't rely on people like that. And so I was like, ooh, that's a mindset thing,
Oh,
right?
yeah. Yeah.
The mindset thing. And so once he started to work through that from the psychological perspective, now his business has grown. He has 50 employees. He's less in the mix, and he's much happier
I
now as a
bet.
result of it,
Yeah.
But it wasn't until he was really comfortable, Russ, with being in that like spin cycle of trauma, right?
Oh,
As a
wow.
business owner. And I'm like, can you not see this? And he didn't see anything wrong with it up until we unpacked where it was all coming from. And it had a lot to do with his adverse childhood experiences that he never addressed.
Yeah, wow. When you had your psychologist hat on as you were going through this thing, and I guess it doesn't necessarily take a psychologist to cause somebody to realize that, you're this way for a reason, look back. But in the course of that conversation and that realization, did that just kind of come with a mental, emotional, or something, or was it just like an aha moment? You know what I'm asking? Was a dramatic
Shift.
realization
Yeah.
in a response, or just, oh yeah, hey, yeah, you're right.
It normally is a some sense, it's normally a somber feeling when we start talking about those things, especially with men in general too, because normally it's a little harder to break through some of that, vulnerability or emotional perspectives because of how I think society tells you all that you have to be, right? So
Macho.
macho, strong, you can't, you just got to get it done, right? And that's so unrealistic because you're human just like I. So in those moments, normally what I find is it's very somber and quiet, and it's almost as if like there's some processing that has to occur. And then from there, when we come back to the next session, it's, I really was thinking about what we talked about, and I literally couldn't sleep because of that, as a result of that. And all of these things started coming back, then his memory like started to allow things to come back. And he said to me, like, I can't, you're right, I can't live like this. Like, I cannot live like this anymore. So now what do I do? So that's kind of how that process. But generally, when we start to make those connections, most people don't take the time to think about that.
Oh,
It's not
yeah.
like get into those situations where we're talking, we're having a conversation, and I'm asking you questions, and then I'm starting to put the pieces together. It's normally, I never thought about it that way. Or because I experienced that hurt thing so long ago, I've tried to forget about it.
Right.
Forget
Yeah.
about it.
Yeah. And for it would have been easy just to say, well, I really don't trust these people that are working for me, but you had the presence of mind to dig a little deeper and say, well, where the heck did that come from? What's going on with that? And then as he opened up, as you got the crowbar out and pried his emotions and his past out and into the open, then you get to what was going on with that. And that was it, something from his childhood. Isn't that remarkable
Yeah.
how things that have been, 50, 60, 70, I don't know how long old this fellow was, but we all have those kinds of things. We've all had difficult things, and we've got to, either let them control us or we're going to control them, one of the two. So, oh, that's
Absolutely.
really awesome. That's a very good example of learning how to give up control and to trust people. And like you said, his business has grown. He's got what, 50 people now?
50
And
people now. Yeah.
hopefully he's enjoying life more because he can take time off, because he's got a well-oiled machine that he has trained these individuals, and he trusts them, for crying out loud. So
Yes.
that's
Now
an awesome thing.
it's a $1 million business, at this point. And so he's just, again, just in awe of that. And so I think it's easy for us sometimes to, on the surface, to look at an issue and then say, okay, let's put processes in place so he can have more trust, right? Or put more systems and processes. That's general, like instinctive, like, okay, we're going to do this, but then you can, but that still doesn't resolve the issue. So I take an approach of zooming out and really looking at what a problem is in its totality, because, and we're just putting a band-aid on something, we're not really fixing the surgical like issues and layers when we do surgery. So it is important just to sometimes just ask a question like, oh, I wonder where this is coming from.
Son of a gun. Yeah, if you don't ask, you don't know, you don't find out. Oh, that's really cool. That's enlightening for sure. So we have come to the time in our little chat where I ask you to talk to the audience directly and offer some advice that might be useful to them in their quest for improving, self-improving, financial improvement, at whatever the case may be. What comes to mind that you could pass on to this audience?
Yeah, what I'll say is for those that are listening, it's really important when you are in an organization, whether you're working it, wanting to lead it, or intending to, just climb up the corporate ladder, you really need to know who you are. And when you know who you are, where you're supposed to be. And when you cannot be who you are, then you change where you are, but never change who you are. And so that would be my advice. Is take some time to develop a relationship with yourself to understand who you are and know that hope is not a plan. Hoping that things will change, hoping that things will get better, that's not a plan. Nobody's going to come and get you and save you. You got to make sure that you trust and believe in your thought processes, and you have to make sure that you have a plan that, is strategic and tactical, but you first have to know who you are and what you want before you can even get there. Never settle. And don't allow people to tell you or dictate to you where your career should be or how it should flow. Again, make sure it aligns with who you are internally. So that way you won't find yourself, in situations where, again, you're just being in a work environment that's toxic or you stay somewhere a little bit too long. Because when you're not in your place where you're supposed to be, what your purpose is, somebody is waiting on you to show up. And we, if we are waiting for you to show up, but you've talked yourself out of writing that book, or you've talked yourself out of providing that service, or you've talked yourself out of giving us that business, the person that is waiting for you cannot have their needs met. And so it's a chain. And so I will say, like, I want people to really be, really think about your ideas just don't happen by happenstance. So if there's something that's permeating on your spirit, I want you to really write that down and really hold yourself accountable to seeing it through.
It's not an automatic thing. Success is not a guarantee. It's not an automatic thing. There's work to be done, and the work starts with the individual.
Yes.
Yeah, indeed. This you started with know who you are. Very important. And I assume that that relates to strong points, weak points, and so on and so forth. And you change where you are. If it's not working where you're at, change where you are, but not who you are. What does the term reinvent myself mean? I hear about, a person that, well, I reinvented myself, and now I'm this. What is that not? Is that not? Is that part of them changing who they are, or just the outcome of who they are? I don't get it. What is, explain that, will you?
Sometimes it could be different for everybody, but sometimes people who had adverse childhood experiences, for example, say for instance, they were so used, they had no boundaries. They used to get bullied and beat up all of the time. And so one day they wake up and they say, you know what? I am now 40 years old. I'm no longer allowing people to bully me anymore. I found my voice. This is a new me. It's a new year, right? And that's not necessarily changing who they are. That's owning who they are.
Huh.
And in the reinvention of themselves, it's saying it's making themselves a little bit better. It's shedding off that dead skin and saying, you know, I don't think I was ever at those times when I was being abused and those times when people used to talk down on me and I allowed people to run over me. That wasn't me being who I was. That wasn't who I was called to be.
All right.
It's who people made me feel like I should be. Right, it's what I accepted for myself, but now, I got a new attitude. Now the real me is here, and I want you all to know. And let me introduce you to them. And it's a person that's not going to be beat up, bullied, or talked down to. So now I'm reinventing myself and really, or really showing up, right, to be who I am. So I
And
think that they
that,
got to be.
yeah, and that really comes from revelation, basically, because a lot of people in the example that you just given that, abused and beat down and so on, they come out of that saying, well, shoot. That's who I am, and that's what I'm going to be, and that's the way it is. Where that's pretty bad deal, isn't it?
It is. It's a terrible deal. It's a
Heck
horrible deal
yeah.
to live your life like that, or think that that's what you were supposed to do, or what you're supposed to be. And that's not what we're called for, you know. And even when we think about money, you know, it's just again, for me, I had to reinvent myself because I literally thought that it could never happen for me. Me making, you know, a $500,000 in an organization, that was unheard of. I didn't believe that I was to have a good relationship with money. I was almost prepared to struggle. Like, I'm gonna fight the struggle. And I had, oh my God, that is it's insanity. That is insane, right? And so I had to reinvent myself in that, no, like there's gotta be something better out here for me. Like there's got to be something a little bit more softer and easier for me in terms of how I see myself with money and you know, it doesn't have to rule me, and it's not about having things, but like I really got to get a little bit smarter about this conversation with myself, to know that I deserve it first and foremost, and everything in my life doesn't have to be a struggle, including earning money.
Awesome. And because you've been successful, you're able to help other people reach that too, having walked through your experiences and the insights that you've gained in the whole life, the whole life of Rochelle Thompson, basically.
Yeah.
So somebody's out there and says, man, I could use some counsel, I could use some help, I could use some input. How do they reach you, Rochelle?
So they can reach me by going to my website. It's www.rochellemthompson.com. They can find me on Instagram at Dr. R. Thompson. They can research me on LinkedIn. You can send me an email, info@rochellemthompson.com. And hopefully they're checking you out here, Russ, on this podcast, you know. And if ever anything aligns and you're like, man, I got the perfect person for you. I know somebody, I interviewed her, you know, then Russ, you can give them my information too. And then we can go from
Indeed, indeed. So you're all over the place. People can find you anywhere. You might be in Washington, D.C., but you are omnipresent. You're available,
there.
probably to help most anybody, most anywhere. So I've really appreciated this time we've had together. And like I said earlier, I never know what's going to transpire when I start one of these conversations, but this has been really cool. And to have come at this from the self The position of self, the position of one's mind and mindset, you know, I think is very enlightening. Hopefully the audience, our audience will agree and will have picked up a gob of information to help them along their way to financial success, success in any field areas, as far as that goes, right? You know,
yeah.
Success is success. You know, it definitely helps to have the money, but it's not the end all stuff. So anyway, that said, any final quick thing before we hang up here?
No, Russ, thank you. Thank you for offering your platform and extending it to people to share their stories, no matter how small or big they are in the space. You know, the work that you're doing is really appreciated and you're walking and you're calling. So I'm just happy and honored and humbled. So I just want you to keep going, keep on just walking yourself into whatever you walk yourself into, because it really does make a difference. So thank you.
All right. Well, appreciate that. You're making me blush. Anyway, folks, here we have another great episode of Money Talks, talking about money, but actually talking about you, talking about fixing you so you can become the best you and exude the best you and become the best things that you are meant to become. It's all put together, and it's for you. You deserve more time. You deserve more money. You deserve the best that life has to offer. If Rochelle can help you, Dr. Rochelle, you know how to get a hold of her. If I can be of service, rstcoachingacademy.com, or call at 386-286-2450. I was going to say anytime, but not quite anytime. You can leave a message when I don't answer. But anyway, it's great having you folks with us today. Rochelle, it's been great having you with us. And we're just going to say goodbye for now until we meet again online here. And we'll say over and out for now. Take care. Bye-bye. Hi, thanks for being here today for another episode of Money Talks. I hope it was informative and encouraging to you. If it struck a chord in your heart, or if you have any questions or comments, please let us know. Visit us at rstcoachingacademy.com, call 386-286-2450, or send an email to email@rstcoachingacademy.com. Thanks again, and until next time, be great.